Hello, everyone. Welcome to Minghui Radio, bringing you podcasts of stories relating to the persecution of Falun Gong in China, insights and experiences gained by practitioners during the course of their cultivation, special items of interest, and music composed and performed by DAFA practitioners.
The following is an excerpt of an experience-sharing article entitled Unshakable Righteous Faith by a Falun Dafa practitioner in China. The article was a selected submission celebrating the 24th World Falun Dafa Day on the Minghui website and was published on May 18, 2022. My name is Mei Lian, and I am 71. I used to be a lay Buddhist and attended temple activities for 20 years. I stopped going to the temple after I began to practice Falun Dafa in 1994. Before the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, began to persecute Dafa, I hosted a group practice site at my home. After the suppression started in 1999, I turned my home into a production site for Falun Dafa materials. I experienced many ups and downs in the past 24 years, but nothing could change my faith. Part 1. This is true cultivation. I was born in a county seat, but my family was always poor. My parents had 5 children, and I am the 4th one. Since childhood, I did not have enough food to eat or enough clothing to keep me warm. Life was always miserable for me. I looked forward to cultivating Buddhahood to avoid suffering. I began searching for a master in the 1970s. I met a nun with all 12 precepts. Having a vague instinct that my master should be very young, I respected her very much and wanted to take her as my master after I found she was younger than me. But she recommended that I find someone who was older than her. I did not budge. In the end, I chose the nun's deceased master as my master. I also did Buddhist rituals with her. I could not read, but I wanted to hand copy the scripture, so I copied the characters stroke by stroke. The nun treated me very well. Living a thrifty life, I gave the vegetable oil and rice I had to the temple. Other than working, raising my child, and buying daily necessities, I did not go anywhere else and just focused on studying the Buddhist scriptures. 20 years had passed, and I still had health issues. After getting divorced in 1990, I took custody of my 9-year-old daughter. Life became especially hard after I was laid off in 1994. In May of that year, I vomited, had diarrhea, and could not eat or drink for 7 days. Seeing me lying in bed, my daughter asked me to go see a doctor. I told her that I had bought medicine already. In reality, we did not even have money for food, let alone medicine. After a few days, a co-worker came to me and said, "You should try Falun Dafa. It is very good, and it is a Buddhist school practice." Although I had not tried other spiritual systems aside from visiting the temple, somehow I followed her to the practice site. I felt very good while listening to the exercise music. "Falun Dafa is great, and this is true cultivation," I thought to myself. I began to do the sitting meditation. I was sweating, and my shirt was wet. The sweat came down in both palms. My coworker was a little afraid and asked me to stop, but I felt very comfortable and continued. It was not until later that I learned Master was cleansing my body. After getting back home, I listened to Master's lecture audios. The teachings sank into my mind, sentence by sentence. When Juan Falun, the main text of DAFA, was published, I was one of the first practitioners in my area who bought it. I could not read, but I held the book in front of me while listening to Master's lectures. I learned by reading word by word. Gradually, I was able to read Juan Falun. But if I see the characters elsewhere, I'm unable to recognize them. One day, while sitting on the couch reading Juan Falun, I had my legs in the full lotus position and covered them with a blanket. As I was reading, I felt as if my feet were gone. I pinched that place and could not feel anything. I was scared and lifted the blanket. My feet were still there. I think this was the situation Master was describing in Juan Falun. Quote, "As you sit in meditation, it will seem as if your legs have disappeared and you don't know where they are." Unquote. I told the nun that I wanted to practice Falun Dafa, and she tried to stop me. Seeing that I was unwilling to change my mind, she invited other nuns and lay Buddhists to talk to me. Some of them threatened me, but I did not give in and was determined to cultivate Falun Dafa. One day, when listening to Master's lectures, I heard the following, quote, "The Buddha stated that in the latter days, it would be hard even for temple monks to gain salvation, much less lay Buddhists, who would no longer be watched over by higher beings. You might have formally become a student of some teacher, but if that individual isn't doing genuine spiritual practice, then he will be no different from an adherent himself. Spiritual progress isn't possible without working on the mind. The ceremonies of conversion are human affairs and couldn't possibly be all it takes for you to become, for instance, Buddhist and enjoy the Buddha's care and protection. That's not how it works, and neither will praying and bowing to a statue so fervently that your body aches, nor lighting scores of devotional candles change anything. What you have to do is really work on your heart and mind with all due sincerity." Unquote. From this, I realized the importance of only one cultivation way. So I sent the three Bodhisattva statues I had back to a local temple. I also returned the chanting rosary and the Buddhist scriptures to the nun. After searching for many years, I knew I finally found my true master, Falun Dafa's founder, Mr. Li Hongzhi. After the CCP began to suppress Dafa, I went to Beijing to appeal for the right to practice Dafa. I was arrested and detained at a local detention center. The nun asked a lay Buddhist to bail me out so that I could join her in the temple. The lay Buddhist told the nun, "She is determined, and it's not worth trying." I was later sentenced to 7 years in prison. When I returned home, weeds were all over the yard, and everywhere inside the house was covered with dust. My daughter was already married. The nun still asked me to go back to the temple. I said no, because I know what Falun Dafa means to me. Part 2. My home as a group practice site. After losing my job in 1994, I did part-time sewing jobs to make a living. My house is located in the city center, and it is big. Although I could rent it out to earn some income, I still decided to use it for group practice, as more and more people had taken up Dafa. I connected two large rooms on the second floor. About 50 or 60 practitioners came to my house every morning and evening, doing the exercises as well as studying Dafa teachings. Seeing me having financial difficulty, the group site assistant wanted to help cover some utility costs. my daughter and I did not want to accept it. I had a dream one night in which someone said to me, 98. I asked what that means. He replied, "You will know it when you go shopping tomorrow." The next day, the music player we used for the group exercise was broken. My daughter and I immediately went to buy a new one. The new music player cost exactly 98 yuan, and my money was enough to pay for it. My second sister also came to my home for practice. She often saw colorful Falun rotating on both the first floor and the second floor of my house. She also saw lotus flowers growing in the yard. But after I was jailed for my belief, she was scared and stopped practicing. When I was released, she had been diagnosed with severe heart disease. I tried to persuade her to come back to Dafa. She was still afraid and later passed away. In the room where I do exercises, there is a large portrait of Master. I respected Master very much and took good care of the Dafa books. Whenever I was reading them, I would sit in full lotus and carried the book with both hands. Falun Dafa is the true way. Part 3. Speaking up for Dafa. After the CCP began to suppress Falun Dafa, in July 1999, my daughter and I joined other practitioners in going to the provincial capital and Beijing to appeal for Dafa. We took the train to Beijing on August 15th, 1999. Upon arriving there, we stood in the cornfield for one night. With little income, I had to borrow money to pay for the train tickets. Police took us to a detention center, and we went on a hunger strike. We refused to give out our names. When being forced to take a picture, I realized that it was important to show the dignity of Dafa practitioners, so I placed both hands together in front of me in a Jain position while wearing a smile. In the beginning, there were many practitioners, but gradually, all of them were taken away, and only three of us were left in the end. Since we all spoke Mandarin with no dialect accent, police could not tell where we were from. One police officer was upset and asked, "What exactly do you want?" I replied, "We just want to tell the government that Falun Dafa is good. We want the freedom to practice Dafa, nothing else." The officer then asked about my family. I told him my situation. After hearing I had lost my job and I had to borrow money from my daughter and me to come to Beijing, the officer sighed. "How silly you are. How can one person like you make a difference?" I said, "Falun Dafa is great. To me, Master Li is like my parents, and he was wronged. I have to speak up for Dafa and Master Li." Knowing saying bad things about Dafa would accumulate karma, I hoped the officer would not do this. He asked me to squat down next to the window and did not say anything else. The police figured out later on where I came from. They took me to my region's liaison office in Beijing. Seeing many local practitioners there, I waved to them with a smile and called out, "Hi, fellow practitioners, how are you?" Police officers were surprised by my attitude. After some time, we were taken to the detention center in our area. Every day, we recited Dafa books and did the exercises. We asked for a copy of Duan Falun, but the guards did not give us one. We went on a hunger strike and then received a copy of the book. One evening, I did the sitting meditation for over 7 hours. My mind was calm and I felt very comfortable. One lay Buddhist I knew came to visit me. Her husband is a high official, and they asked the detention center not to mistreat me. When an officer asked if I had any requests, I replied, "We request to immediately release all detained practitioners unconditionally. We also need to be able to study DAFA teachings and do exercises publicly." Hearing these words, the officials thought I was an organizer and put me in solitary confinement. In fact, all practitioners were thinking about the same thing, and we did not have organizers. One practitioner in the detention center was put into foot shackles, and it was hard for her to change clothes. "Take it off," I said. "Yes, I also want to take it off," she said helplessly. One officer said that if she could take off one shackle, they would remove the other half, another practitioner said. "You can take it off," I encouraged her. She tried, and one of the shackles did come off. We called the guards. They checked again and again, but could not find anything wrong, so they removed the other half too. After being released, I learned how to print Falun Dafa materials. I had one computer and two printers to print Mingwei Weekly and materials. I also had a DVD burner for the informational videos. I worked day and night to produce the materials with very little time for eating and sleeping. Later on, the police found the site and arrested me. I was taken to a provincial brainwashing center. Due to my dangerously high blood pressure and a heart condition, the brainwashing center refused to accept me. The 610 Office and Political and Legal Affairs Committee didn't want to release me so easily. They sent me to the provincial hospital for another physical examination. After the doctor tied me to a machine for a color Doppler exam, the machine began to shake and stopped working. "This has never happened before. My instrument is almost broken," he cried out. The doctor then connected me to an ECG machine, and the lines were everywhere. "She is in a life-threatening condition," yelled the doctor. Despite my condition, the 610 office agents pressured a local detention center to accept me. I was kept there for over a year before being sentenced to 7 years. Part 4. I cannot give up my conscience for a job. My daughter was released ahead of me after we were arrested for appealing in Beijing. Upon returning home, she graduated from college and began job searching. Her father used his connections to find two positions for her, one in the Tax Bureau and the other in the City Finance Bureau. Both agencies had agreed to take her, but a deputy mayor did not approve it. He insisted that I had to sign statements to renounce DAFA first before he could sign my daughter's work contract. I said no and told him not to do bad deeds like this. The deputy mayor then approached my daughter and asked her to sign a document promising to stop me from practicing Falun Dafa. Despite being so young, my daughter was clear-minded and refused to comply. She said, "My mother has suffered her entire life. Now she just wants to uphold her faith to be a good person. I cannot give up my conscience for a job. Were I to sign the document and get this office job with high pay, I would not be happy." Because of this issue, my daughter didn't get either of the two jobs. When I was detained, the authorities also wanted to sentence my daughter, but with master's protection, she escaped the arrest. During my 7-year jail term, she had to borrow money from others and did some temporary jobs to make a living. Even her uncle humiliated her by showing her money, but then not lending it to her. No matter what happened, I bore no resentments toward the perpetrators, knowing that they were placing their positions in this battle between good and evil. After I was released, I continued treating them well and persuaded the uncle to renounce his membership in the CCP organizations. Nowadays, after doing the exercises, I send my granddaughter to school. Then I talk to people about Falun Dafa and refute slandering propaganda from the CCP. Many people are thankful upon learning the facts. I too am happy for them to have a good future.
The following is an experience sharing article entitled, Remember to Eliminate Human Notions and Cherish All Beings, by a Falun Dafa practitioner in China. The article was published on the Mingwei website on May 9, 2023. Master Li, the founder of Falun Dafa, said in the poem, No Choice, from Hongyan 6, quote, most human lives are divinities incarnate, unquote. Master also said in the poem, led by the threads of destiny from Hongyan 6, quote, most lives on this earth were once divine in heaven, unquote. Although I understood the surface meaning of these words, I forgot the Fa principles when I ran into difficulties. For example, when I had conflicts with my family, or frictions with my coworkers, I often behaved like a non-practitioner. I felt indignant and resentful and treated them as a nuisance. It is my responsibility to awaken them, so how could I achieve that if I am upset with them? I realized my thoughts were not based on the Fa principles, and that is why I always used human notions to look at the problems. Master told us to study the Fa often, measure everything with the Fa, eliminate human thinking, and find our true selves. I now recite a poem from Hongyan 6 every day. When I run into unpleasant things, I tell myself, do not resent others, I'm the one at fault. I also search inward to find where I'm wrong, why I'm wrong, and what my attachments are. Everything in this world revolves around Dafa. I remind myself that I'm a practitioner, and most people are beings from heaven. They've suffered tremendously and are waiting for us to awaken them so that they can find their way home. There are times when people, such as the public security personnel, mistreat practitioners. We should be clear-headed and remember they are controlled by the old forces elements. They are like pitiful puppets and don't even know they are being manipulated. We should be responsible for them, eliminate the rotten beings behind them, cultivate ourselves well, and tell them about Falun Dafa and the persecution so that they can see the light. I cannot tell whether a person was once divine or not, but I understand that as long as we fulfill our responsibilities, Master and Dafa will take care of the rest.
Thank you for listening to the Minghui Radio podcast. For more information, including news about the persecution of Falun Gong practitioners in China and experience sharing stories by practitioners around the world, please visit our website at en.minghui.org.